Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host, Charlie Goldsmith. And Charlie, it's Bengals Steelers week, right? Like, it's an extra energy around the city of Pittsburgh and city of Cincinnati when AFC North play gets kicked off. You excited?
I should know this stat, but I forget. It's been a minute since the Bengals won in Pittsburgh. I forget the year that the Bengals won last.
It was 2015.
There you go. And right, that was the Sean Williams interception game. Good time. So that was one of the most memorable Bengals wins that they've had over the last 7 years. And again, that shows, you know, that the fact that I'm citing and remembering that Bengals win 6-7 years ago shows the significance of how much a win in Pittsburgh would do for the team.
Yeah, and I was able to talk to Tyler Boyd, and the story is up on Cincinnati.com for those who want to check it out. But Tyler Boyd grew up about 25 minutes away from Heinz Field, a Pittsburgh native all of his life, obviously went to school there. He said, look, there was a lot of pressure getting that first win against the Steelers because up until last year, none of the Bengals teams that Tyler Boyd has been on has ever beaten the Steelers. So he said, well, we got the win last year. I got my first win against the Steelers, but I still haven't accomplished my other goal, and that is to win in Pittsburgh in front of a lot of his friends and family. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to get that done. But before we break everything down for the upcoming matchup with the Steelers, Charlie and I wanted to go back and give our observations and thoughts about the Bengals-Bears game one last time after both watching the game and hearing from Zach Taylor and really dissecting everything. So I think for me, when I went back and watched and now heading into this matchup, I think the biggest thing that I thought played a factor in what happened with the Bengals was their inability to run the ball. I think that was bigger. That was a bigger deal than a lot of people might give credit to, because obviously the big story coming out was, what was the offensive game plan? Why did it take them so long to take deep shots? The pressure on Joe Burrow, all of those things, definitely notable. But I think what we saw when the Bengals aren't able to run the ball, it's really going to make things difficult for Joe. And Zach Taylor said as much when he said, we want to be a physical running team that makes teams load up in the box so that way we can really take advantage of our wide receivers. And they weren't able to do that against the Bears. And it was a big problem for them.
This is really interesting. So, like, the big talking point of the offseason coming off the 2020 season was how much the Bengals wanted to run the ball. And I'm stressing the word wanted. Because last season, think of the game against the Browns. Think of the game against Washington early, Indianapolis early. The Bengals were a pass team. Where some of those games Joe Mixon wasn't playing, but even when Joe Mixon was available, with the exception of that Jacksonville game, the Bengals' run game wasn't the focal point of the offense. So as a result, heading into the 2021 season, there was an idea, there was an understanding that the Bengals are going to continue to be reliant on the pass and maybe even more reliance on that after drafting Ja'Marr Chase. But I agree with you. It's not for a lack of want to, the Bengals in the run game. It's the inability to, aside from the third quarter against Minnesota, create consistent, productive runs. They're trying. They balanced almost evenly the run and the pass on first downs and second downs when the game was still within striking distance against the Bears. They are more, definitely more balanced, doing more under center, doing more two tight end sets, but just so far for whatever it is with the way the offensive linemen are getting out in space, with the way Joe Mixon's hitting his holes, with the specific play calls, based on the opposing defensive scheme, they're not establishing the run, and that's a problem.
And it's interesting, right, Charlie, because we heard so much about how much Frank Pollock coming back, taking over as run game coordinator. Frank Pollock is the Bengals offensive line coach, who's a great offensive line coach here for a number of years, and then was most recently with the New York Jets for the last two seasons, and then Zach Taylor hired him back. And the hope was he was going to come in and A, fix the offensive line, and B, really help them in the run game. And week one, Joe Mixon looked the part, led the NFL in rushing yards. But in week two, to kind of come back and have that performance, it's certainly interesting, to say the least. And you hope that that doesn't become a consistent performance in terms of them not being able to get anything out of their run game, because if they can't, it is going to be a long season for Joe Burrow.
So when the Bengals hired Frank Pollock, here's what someone really stressed to me. Joe Mixon had a career year in 2018, mm-hmm. Pollock's year in Cincinnati, and the Bengals did that with a rookie center, a left tackle and a left guard playing their last full seasons before retirement, a right tackle who had just been waived, and an undrafted free agent at right guard. So again, that message that was really being stressed was the Bengals with the scheme should be able to run the ball, despite who their offensive, almost in spite of who their offensive linemen were, like they were in 2018. So now again, it's almost a schematic thing where whether or not the moments and the calls, match what the opposing defense is doing and where the Bengals are at in the game. Again, the Bengals are putting a focus on establishing the run considerably more than they did in 2020. And almost inexplicably, the results haven't created consistent, positive chain-moving runs like the Bengals really were anticipating when they brought Frank Pollock in.
And another thing I observed was there was so much talk following the game about the 9 quarterback hits Joe Burrow took. The Bengals were really high on 2 players on the offensive line before the season, and that was Jonah Williams and Riley Reiff. Brian Callahan said as much, and so did Zach Taylor. They brought in Riley Reiff in free agency. He's been the best offensive lineman for the Bengals through 2 games, so that investment the front office made has certainly proved to be worth it. Jonah Williams is a first-round pick, and they need him to be a consistent player protecting Joe Burrow's blind side, and he hasn't been that. He struggled against the Bears, and he said after the game, I need to be better. And I think that's probably what's concerning, is that your first round pick, you expect him to not be the problem on the offensive line. And I'm not saying Jonah Williams is the Bengals' only problem, but you're not going into the season thinking you're going to have to worry about Jonah Williams producing the way you want him to. And they had to on Sunday. So that's where the blame can go all across the board in terms of the Bengals' pass protection issues.
I do disagree with that a bit. I had 2 mistakes that Jonah was involved in on Sunday. I had the false start, which was in a big spot. And then I had Burrow's first sack of the game where the 2 Bears edge rushers kind of crisscrossed. Quentin Spain took Jonah's assignment and Jonah stepped back and didn't pick up. And that obviously led to a big Burrow sack, but I think those are Williams' only mistakes through the first 2 games. I'm more concerned about, from a coaching perspective, how the Bengals' offensive line on the left side and the right side weren't prepared for that crisscross scheme that the Bears tried on both sides of the line of scrimmage. It worked on both sides. I'm more concerned with the fact that Joe Mixon just completely whiffed in pass protection on Burrow's 3rd interception of the game. I'm more concerned with the fact that that Burrow took one of his biggest hits of the game on a sack where either Mike Thomas or Ja'Marr Chase forgot to run a screen, and Burrow had nothing to do but take a huge hit. I think those details are more important and bigger takeaways from Sunday than one specific player.
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying that. Like I said, all the pass protection issues are not just on one person. And I think that's what's so frustrating for Zach Taylor, is because it's not just one person. It's not as simple as, oh, we can just play his backup and take him out of the starting lineup. It's across the board. It's running backs, as you mentioned. It's wide receivers, and it's the offensive line. But I was saying, after looking through the game and then going through the PFF grades, Jonah Williams was one of the lowest rated offensive linemen coming out of that game. So it's something to at least bring up. So let's switch gears a little bit and start talking about the Steelers, because this game, even though it's week 3, feels like a critical game for a number of reasons, because all training camp and preseason, we have heard this is the year for the Bengals. Tyler Boyd said it to me. He said, this is the team. He said, it is different than any other Cincinnati Bengals team I've ever played on. The energy, the emphasis on this team being able to win games is there. They cannot compete in the AFC North if they don't learn how to start winning on the road and going into some of these hostile environments and stealing wins. Obviously, that's a lot easier said than done. But to not have a win in Pittsburgh since 2015 is is something that the Bengals need to start turning around if they want to be contenders in the AFC North again.
So here are my thoughts. I agree, but I think I agree for different reasons. I'm not a believer, just personally, this is just my opinion, that hostile road environment and monkey on their back and pressure against a division rival, I think some of that gets a little overblown as an outside narrative, not citing that in particular, mm-hmm. but like I think that gets mentioned a lot by fans, but I think inside the building, those aren't the descriptions they use. The reason that I think the Bengals haven't won in Pittsburgh is because the Steelers, year after year during this stretch, have had an elite defensive line. And as the Bengals' offensive line has had turnover and turnover and turnover every season, they haven't had a winning formula, with the exception of the Ryan Finley game. But in Pittsburgh, they haven't had a winning formula on the road to combat that. This is the game where the Bengals' offensive line turnover from a year-over-year perspective really gets exposed. So that now takes us to this year, where, you know, Xavier Suofilo and Quentin Spain, the new pieces, they were starters for the Bengals for a lot of last season. And then, of course, Trey Hopkins and Jonah Williams had been starters before that, and Riley Reiff has been a starter in the league for a while. So this is probably the most experienced offensive line they've had going into the Pittsburgh matchup, and now it's about a game plan that matches that, because, again, the Bengals can't let the Steelers' defensive line beat them again, which seems to be what always happens in Pittsburgh.
Well, the Bengals might be coming to Pittsburgh with a little bit of luck in terms of injuries on their side. TJ Watt suffered a groin injury last week. Devin Bush has a groin injury. Alex Highsmith has a groin injury. Joe Hayden has a groin injury. Those are several key starters for the Steelers defense, and especially with the Watt and Highsmith, and you just talking about the pressure that they've been able to create on Cincinnati's offensive line. We don't know the severity of all of their injuries and if that means they're going to be able to play or not play. We'll keep an eye on the injury report. But if those guys aren't able to play, it's a different ball game for Cincinnati.
This is an interesting part of it, too. Aside from the Ravens, I think the Steelers last season had the best scheme against Joe Burrow. And I think that Burrow played his worst game of the 2020 season against Pittsburgh because of how they just my memory of that game is Burrow just on his back foot. Burrow having to react to the Steelers' defensive line because they were dictating the terms of the game. And it was more than just a couple pass rushers. It was a scheme. And so we never got the chance to see Burrow make that adjustment last season and apply what he learned. Now he gets the chance to apply what he learned at this point last year, one full year later, against a consistent Pittsburgh defensive scheme. It'll be a great opportunity for Joe Burrow to show how much he has grown. Because again, the Pittsburgh Steelers throw a lot at you at the line of scrimmage.
What do you anticipate? Let's just play theoretically right now. Let's pretend you're the offensive coordinator. What do you anticipate the Bengals' offensive plan being going into Pittsburgh, knowing they can't show up and go empty all the time like they did against the Bears, because they've put that on tape now?
That's a great question. Like, obviously, there's going to be a focus on running the ball, because they showed against Minnesota and against Chicago that even regardless of game situation sometime, they need the run to be a significant part of the offense. And, you know, the rest of it, I think part of it comes down to who's healthy on the Pittsburgh defensive line. If TJ Watt's in there, I do think you have to adjust your game plan a bit. On top of that, I see getting T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd more involved. They've both had success against that Steelers secondary before. Just in general, I guess, like, yeah, the reason I'm having trouble answering this question is because, like, this is the game where we're going to see what the Bengals' ideal identity and ideal run-pass balance and who they view their number one weapons as. We're going to get a much better idea of that pecking order because Pittsburgh really forces you to do what you're good at.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they come out with this week, because you're right. They've had 1 week of really trying to run the ball, and that really opened up things from a vertical passing attack in week one. Week two, they weren't able to run the ball, tried to go the short game, short quick game, a lot of empty sets. That didn't really work out. So it'll be interesting to see what Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan come up with to go up against this Pittsburgh defense. It's also worth noting the Bengals are suffering a little bit of key injuries to starters. Xavier Suafilo and T. Higgins are both considered day-to-day after suffering injuries against the Bears. We don't know the severity of both injuries, but if Xavier Suafilo cannot go on Sunday, it's going to be rookie Jackson Carmen time. And Zach Taylor said he is confident. So we'll see what happens with those two injuries. But those are definitely notable. I think T. Higgins is one to keep your eye on, because if the Bengals don't have T. Higgins, it's a different ball game in terms of game planning. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Let's talk a little bit about the Bengals defense versus the Steelers offense, who we know they got a lot of heat last year in terms of not being able to run the ball. We're talking about the Bengals not being able to run the ball. The Steelers finished last in the league in rushing offense last year. They draft Najee Harris, who's supposed to be the real deal. Obviously, we all saw what he did at Alabama. What do you anticipate seeing from the Steelers offense after the first two games? What do you think about them?
So I've said this since the draft. Pittsburgh has a bad offense. It's just a bad offense. And it's the reason I'm going to pick the Bengals to win this game, because I see the difference between the Bengals defense and the Steelers offense being more important than the difference between the Bengals offense and the Steelers defense. There are questions about the Bengals offensive line, but the Steelers have even more unproven and more inconsistent offensive linemen. Their offseason strategy was to draft a running back and a tight end and try to fix the offense that way, which I don't see leading to a specific adjustment so far. They really struggled against the light pass rush against the Raiders, and on top of that, didn't establish the run last week either, while the Raiders mostly rushed four defensive linemen. And on top of that, I'm not a believer in Ben Roethlisberger at this point of his career. Just look at what the Bengals, how well the Bengals guarded him when the Steelers came to Cincinnati in the second half of the season last year. There was no down the field threat. There was no panic when Roethlisberger scrambled outside the pocket, which was Roethlisberger's strength and how he beat Cincinnati when he was in his prime. So I just don't see enough areas where the Bengals defense is going to be tested, even though the Steelers have very good skill position players. And on top of that, I mean, I think this is going to be a great barometer for a pass rush on Cincinnati that I'm starting to become a stronger and a stronger believer that it's more and more legitimate.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I'd give the nod to the Bengals defense if we're comparing who has the leg up between the Bengals defense and the Steelers offense. I still go back to last year, Ben Roethlisberger really didn't have much of a run game, and the Bengals were able to win 11 straight games, and Chase Claypool and some of those guys were able to get it done on the outside. It's just going to be a matter of, I think, who's going to get the ball last, because I think this game's going to come down to the wire. But yeah, the Bengals defense continues to impress, especially up front. I thought it was interesting to hear what Mike Tomlin said about the Bengals. I always like to hear what the opposing head coach says about the team. And he started when he said, I want to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. He started with the interior play up front with the Bengals. And I think that speaks to just how well that group is playing. If the head coach of the Steelers, of all the people he could talk about, I mean, he could talk about Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon. He starts with the Bengals interior defensive line. And I think that's a big deal, because it's clearly been a priority for this team, and it looks to be paying off in a big way.
I keep going back to DJ Reader bursting up the middle for his first sack as a Bengal yesterday. I've said this before, I'm just really impressed by his hustle, how he's able to make a play like outside the numbers on a run and stop someone for a 1 yard loss, for him to cover that much ground, for Trey Hendrickson to be playing like a number one pass rusher so far. I mean, these are just important things for a defensive line that was legitimately bad throughout the entire 2020 season. To have players like that, and Larry Ogunjobi is different, and probably the reason Tomlin stressed it so much is just because he didn't have to worry about that at all last season, because specifically on the interior, the Bengals were the worst in the NFL. This season, that's not the case, and they've shown tangible improvement.
So before we finish up here today, let's give our key players on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, players that we think need to have big games in order for the Bengals to win or have a crucial matchup that's going to be a game-deciding matchup. So let's go offensively. My key player is going to be Joe Mixon. I think he tweeted after the game, we will be better. As we talked about earlier in this podcast, the Bengals need to run the ball against this Steelers defense, because even if they don't have Highsmith and TJ Watt and some of those known pass rushers, they're still the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're still going to be a stout defense. I think if the Bengals are able to establish the run and Mixon's able to rip off a couple long, you know, 18-yard runs and is really able to kind of give this offense a boost, I think it's going to go a long way.
I'm just this is such a cop out. I'm going to go with like the scheme, which I know that's not a player. I am so curious what the Bengals are going to try to do against Pittsburgh. I am so curious how what Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase said after the Bears game, the fact that the Bengals need to be more aggressive, taking more shots down the field and can't play on their back foot with short passes because that was something the Bears were sitting on. I'm so curious to whether those comments carry enough weight to lead to a real schematic difference, or if the Bengals facing a team with a similarly stout pass rush say, if the coaches say, no, we think this is the right answer for this type of matchup. I am so curious to see if there's going to be a change or not. Because again, it's going to be a similar position. Now, do you change based off what you've learned last week? Or do you, I guess, stick to your guns and believe that it's going to produce different results because you have more confidence in that game plan you dialed up for week two?
Yep, we shall see. On defense, I think a big player to keep an eye on in this game is going to be the cornerback who plays. And the reason I'm saying the cornerback, because we don't know if Trey Waynes is going to be back this week. The Bengals didn't place him on IR, which meant that they thought he would be able to be back, and if he's not able to play again this weekend, I think at some point you kind of saw it with Chicago, Eli Apple is going to be exposed. So I was saying the cornerback who plays opposite of Cheeto, because I think they've tested him. We saw in week one against the Vikings when he had to come in. Week two, he got away. He had a terrible pass interference play that was a big momentum changer in the game. But I think eventually these teams are going to start game planning to take advantage of that side of the Bengals defense with him in coverage. And you kind of can't blame them based off of the way you've seen him play the last 2 weeks.
I'm going to go with Von Bell. There's a reason that Von Bell had his best game as a member of the Bengals on Monday Night Football against the Steelers last season. And that's because the Steelers do so much over the middle, specifically they did last season. And I've seen that continue so far. So many of the plays last year were just funneled in the direction of the field that Von Bell roams. And I think Von was one of the MVPs of the entire game, more than just one hit. Again, playing his most well-rounded game as a member of the Bengals to lead the team to that win last season. So now again this year, Vaughn, who I think has improved during the offseason, is he able to wreck the game just as much and really eliminate the dink and dunk over the middle of the field stuff that the Steelers were trying to do last season? That's what I'm going to have my eye on.
How about Mike Tomlin calling Jesse Bates and Von Bell, the Cincinnati safety tandem, salty? That's how he described them, which I thought was an interesting way to describe them.
Yeah, and who knows? So Darius Phillips always has a great game against Pittsburgh. I wonder if he factors into the cornerback mix this week as well.
Well, and also this could be a big game for Mike Hilton, because Mike Tomlin said they used to use Mike Hilton specifically to match up with Tyler Boyd. He called him out and said that was his job when the Bengals played the Steelers. It was Mike Hilton, your job is to make sure Tyler Boyd doesn't wreck this game. So it's interesting now that he's on the Bengals side of things, how he'll do in this first matchup where he's playing against his former team. That'll be a fun storyline to watch.
Yeah, we saw the exact opposite in week one, where Mackenzie Alexander of the Vikings was guarding Tyler Boyd, and the Bengals just went there for 2 third-down conversions that were big in the game.
Yeah, good luck trying to stop Tyler Boyd. He's a hard guy to stop on third down especially. Well, for more on this matchup, to get a little bit more insight on what Bengals fans can expect from the Steelers, we're going to bring in Steelers team reporter Missy Matthews. And now to get us ready for Sunday's game with the Bengals and Steelers facing off at Heinz Field is my good friend who covers the Steelers on a daily basis. She does a great job. I call her the Queen of Pittsburgh. Her name is Missy Matthews. Missy, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're the best hype woman, of course. thank you for having me.
So let's talk about this game, because you've been covering the Steelers and Bengals game for a lot longer than I have. So what should I expect from this rivalry game in Pittsburgh?
Well, you know, we like to use Tomlinisms here in Pittsburgh. And anytime it's an AFC North matchup, Coach Tomlin always says it's going to be hot in the kitchen, because it truly does not matter what the records are going in. Obviously, this time around, everybody in the AFC North is sitting at 1-1 after 2 weeks. But it's just kind of that mantra, that gritty, physical, you know, your bodies are going to hurt the next day type of football, because all of the teams are kind of built similar. And it's just always one of those games. You never know what's going to happen.
So let's start with what's going on right now with the Steelers. You can fill us in on all the injury news that came out yesterday from Mike Tomlin's press conference. Is there a position that isn't banged up for the Steelers? I mean, obviously the notable big story to come out of yesterday's press conference was that Ben Roethlisberger is dealing with an injury. What can you tell us about what's going on with Ben and some of the rest of the key injuries the Steelers are facing right now?
Yeah, you know, you'd hate to head into week three with a long list of injuries, especially when they're all to starters. You know, Tyson Alualu, who meant so much to the Steelers defensive front, especially with Stephon Tuitt on IR. He had ankle surgery on Monday, so he, of course, is on IR. He's out now. But, you know, Ben Roethlisberger spoke to the media this morning. You know, it was news to everybody when Coach Tomlin said it on Tuesday about this pec injury. Ben said it's on the left side, has no idea when it happened, said he felt like it was probably earlier in the game, couldn't pinpoint a specific play. But, you know, Ben was sacked 2 times. He was hit 10 times. There's, you know, a lot of times where Ben ended up on the ground. So you can imagine, you know, letting the adrenaline get you through, but said it's not feeling so great in terms of like reaching for an item. That kind of hurts. Pushing yourself up off the ground, that hurts him right now. It is Wednesday, as Ben said, so there is some time. And typically, Ben doesn't practice on Wednesdays. That's usually his vets day off. So I wouldn't anticipate him practicing anyways. But obviously, something to monitor when your star quarterback is not at 100% heading into week three. But yeah, the groin injuries that seem to be taking over the defense, especially the linebacker position. Devin Bush didn't play last week because of a groin injury. Joe Hayden from the secondary, groin injury. And then we know TJ Watt didn't come out, wasn't able to finish, you know, even going into halftime. He's dealing with a groin injury. And the other new one was fellow outside linebacker Alex Highsmith, groin injury. So it has not been great. And even wide receiver Deontay Johnson's dealing with a knee injury. So you can rest assured that we'll closely be following the injury news coming out of practice over the next 3 days.
So I want to circle back on the Ben injury, because that's obvious. I mean, there's a ton of injuries to starters that you just mentioned. But if Ben isn't able to go, who is the guy that you think will get the start? Is it going to be Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins?
I think it would be Mason Rudolph, but I would bet money that Ben is going to play on Sunday. Especially, Ben has played through some crazy injuries. He's just one of those tough guys. And you know, he's also obviously a veteran. So even if he only gets some snaps on Friday, they're able to, you know, trust that he knows what he's doing. Of course, it's a new offense. You're dealing with a lot of young guys among the offensive line. You have a new rookie running back, but still, I would not count Ben out. I fully expect him to play on Sunday.
Okay, that's good to know. You heard it here first on the Bengals Beat podcast, Missy Matthews letting you guys in on what could be maybe a little secret. Well, when you talk about Ben and that offense being new, what are some of the things you've observed that are new about the Steelers offense with Matt Canada as the new offensive coordinator?
Well, it's a lot of the stuff that we saw him do in college. You know, he coached for a minute over at Pitt, which is next door to the Steelers practice facility, the pre-snap motion and whatnot. But we truly have not seen a lot of it in game. Yes, Ben has gone under center. There's different things that we've seen. But I truly feel like at this point, they're not able to implement probably everything that they want. I know they have all worked tirelessly throughout this offseason. We've seen, you know, different things, even a wheel route to fullback Derek Watt during training camp. But in terms of translating that to the regular season, probably not as much as they want. And I think it's probably a comfort thing. You know, a lot of the wide receivers have been here for a number of years now and have worked with Ben and know what he's good at. He knows what they're good at. So I think, you know, the biggest transition is just trying to establish a run game, which of course was the biggest issue coming out of the 2020 season, finishing dead last. And something that everybody from the team president, general manager, head coach, players have said has to be fixed. I think that's why you draft Najee Harris 24th overall in the draft, but the O-line is definitely in flux. You know, they've dealt with injuries throughout the offseason and training camp. And even now Zach Banner, who they expected to return as a starter after being named a starter last year, getting hurt in week one, he started on IR. So hopefully that's somebody they can get back next week.
What have your observations of Harris been so far? Obviously a limited sample size given he's only played two regular season NFL games. We saw the stiff arm, but like you said, yeah, the production from the run game for the Steelers still hasn't been quite, I think, maybe what people thought, but it does take some time. I think people, you know, sometimes think that these guys can just come in and it's fixed within the first 2 weeks. But what have you thought about the Steelers' first round pick so far?
I think he's everything that they could ask for and more. I don't think you can blame him for everything. And I don't think you can blame the O-line for everything. Obviously in Buffalo, they came back to win it. You know, this past weekend against the Raiders, they were behind again. And so I think that also changes things where you're forced to throw it more. It's hard to run the ball and, you know, eat up clock when you're playing from behind as well. But it's definitely something that I don't think anybody is obviously happy with where it's at. But, you know, everyone keeps saying it's only two games. You know, Ben even said before the regular season started, we are going to go through growing pains. There's no doubt about it, just based on all the new faces, a new system under Matt Canada. So I think we're unfortunately living through those, and hopefully, you know, they can take another step. Ben even said this morning that he thought Najee did take a step in terms of, you know, maybe not having as much jitters, not trying to force too many things in week two compared to week one. So I think that's pretty much all you can ask from him at this point.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, I want to get your take on the Steelers defense, because when you talk about the Steelers, typically the first thing you start with is their defensive play, because it's just been so consistent and so good for the last, I don't even know how long, last decade. First week, I think a lot of people thought that the Bills would just roll over the Steelers, and it was the Steelers' defense and special teams that really surprised a lot of people and were the reason that they were able to go up to Buffalo and get that win. Then coming back to week two, a home game versus a Raiders team that obviously had some momentum after that Monday night win over the Ravens. But what's going on with the Steelers defense after that performance? And what do you think about the unit overall?
I mean, I still think it's a really good unit. You know, for the past four seasons, they've led the NFL in sacks. They have gone 75 games with at least a sack consecutively. You know, that's crazy.
I don't think you need to remind Bengals fans about that.
Yeah, they've just blown past that record that used to be held by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when Coach Tomlin was a young coach on that staff. So, and I think, you know, with the Bills, everybody was, you know, very excited to see what Josh Allen and company could do. And the Steelers really did have a great defensive plan in terms of disguising things, confusing him, and not bringing maybe as many guys as I bet you the Bills anticipated. Obviously, the Raiders were able to go and watch that film, and the Steelers did try to switch it up a little bit. But I mean, you know, TJ Watt only played 16 snaps out of 66 on defense. And in those 16 snaps, he had a strip sack, I think 4 tackles. I mean, he's just a monster. And losing Tyson, even, you know, Cam Hayward said that was very unexpected. You know, injuries are just, they're part of the game, but I do think they're very jolting. And I think everybody knew immediately that it was not a good injury. So you have Tyson Alualu go down and then TJ Watt not too long after. And all of a sudden, you're missing 2 key components of your defense, and just, you know, they were just on the field way too much. Not that I'm making excuses, but it was extremely hot, just humid, gross, sticky, sunny. So just not a good day for their performance. And then you start the game not having Devin Bush or Joe Hayden. So that's 4 starters that you're down. Not great. Obviously, guys have to step up. The Steelers are big on the next man up mentality. So hopefully this week, with some guys hopefully working their way back earlier in the week, we'll see some of the younger guys who kind of stepped in on the fly, get more reps, maybe become more acclimated with the defensive plan, and that will potentially help them on Sunday against the Bengals.
Do you know if they're anticipating Devin Bush or Joe Hayden being back this week?
No, you know, coach was asked about all these groin injuries and just said at this point, you know, there's different degrees of them, severity. It's hard to pinpoint, and it's really just up to the individual guy or how bad it is or how their body responds. So today is the first day of practice for the Steelers. And I'm sure, you know, if we see any of those guys, it'll probably be just limited. And then the true test will come, you know, what happens tomorrow? Did a guy have more practice reps? Did he go down in practice reps? That kind of thing. So I am anxious to see what happens this week.
All right. Well, we will be keeping all eyes on the injury report heading into Sunday's game. Missy, thanks so much for joining us, and I will see you on Sunday.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
And now for the segment that you've all been waiting for, Jason Hoffman joins me in studio. It's always great when we are able to get together and record this in studio. What do you got for us this week?
Kelsey, we did not have a good week last week. We did not. But thanks to the home dogs being undefeated so far. So the first two we took in week one were the Raiders and the Bengals. They both won outright. Last week, as we both said, Jameis Winston was not going to have a repeat.
I knew it. I knew he was going to turn back into Jameis.
He threw some classic Jameis interceptions.
That's the best way to summarize it. It was incredible. Classic.
It was like Brett Favre with less arm strength when he was like 46.
It's like the scene in Cinderella where she, you know, has to get back before the night ends, and then she has to turn back into her real life. The fantasy is over.
We watched Jameis Winston turn into a pumpkin. Yes. Luckily, again, the home dog won last week. So even though we only went 1-3 as opposed to 3-1 in week one, with a push, I might add, so 2-1-1 or 1-2-1, however you do that. Anyways, if you took the Bengals plus the points, they did cover the spread. They still lost the game outright, which I said was my play, and it was. No worries there. But yeah, so you'd still be up money because of the home dogs. So let's roll into week three.
Let's do it.
We'll save the home dog till the end because we want to make sure that we get as much listenership and engagement out of this podcast as possible. So I'm going to roll right into it. Let's start with the Bengals at the Steelers.
Okay.
News out of Pittsburgh right now. Ben Roethlisberger, not a guaranteed start this week. Now, cynical Bengals fans, people who've been following this team and this rivalry for, I'll say, the last decade, probably cannot remember a single week where Ben played the Bengals and did not come in with an injury, walking to the press conference with crutches, whatever. The famous Barstool sweater where they had the leg brace saying, "Hi, Ben," with its arms out. The walking boot, I should say. So if he doesn't play and there's already been a line move because of his injury, it's gone from 4.5 to 3.5. If you like the Bengals plus the points, get them as soon as possible, because if it's announced that he's going to be out on Thursday, say, tomorrow or even Friday, that line's going to move to a pick 'em. So you're going to lose all the value in that line if you don't get any points. And if you like the Bengals to win, like your feature suggested yesterday where Tyler Boyd said this is the year that they've got the talent to win.
Or like Charlie Goldsmith, who thinks the Bengals are going to go in and win this game.
I mean, if you're going to make a statement.
Just made his prediction.
If you're going to make a statement – this is how you do it, okay. right? And I, you know, if you're like Charlie, and I kind of agree with Charlie, I feel like week one, you had no idea. You all excited, right? Week two, now you're like, what the hell is this team?
Riding
no
the
idea.
Emotional yeah. roller coaster.
So I think something has to click, and what better place for something to click than in Pittsburgh? So if you like that right now, the action is +145 on the money line, and this is on a Wednesday afternoon, by the way. That if Ben can't play, that line will change significantly. Okay. And the Bengals +3.5 or -120. So $120 bet wins you 100. Give up a little value there, but it's worth having more than a field goal, as we saw last week in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Game two that I like. Let's keep riding the Carolina Panther train. So the Houston Texans went into Cleveland and spoiled what I thought was going to be a 24-point loss by keeping it close enough for the Browns to not cover the 12.5.
Right.
They come back home this week without Tyrod Taylor, and they are getting 7.5 against the Panthers. Mm-hmm. Now, transitive properties, right? Do you think the Saints are better than the Texans? I think they are. Saints got blown out by Carolina last week. Now, granted, that was at Carolina.
And the Saints had like 6 coaches.
Correct.
Because, like, their entire
they
coaching staff was on the COVID.
By COVID, yeah. So I like laying the 7.5 here.
Okay.
Just because I think this is a 10-14-point game regardless. So I would take Carolina -7.5. Again, you're giving up a little value because it's a -115 mm-hmm. line.
Right.
But I think it's worth it. Next game. And I have no idea after watching last week how this is such a close line, but New England's laying 2.5, mm-hmm. hosting the Saints. Again, I talked last week about sucker lines.
Yeah.
This feels like a sucker line for some reason. The bookmakers have to know something that none of us do, because I would have set that line after watching both teams play last week at 7.5, 8, and then see how you had to move it to get public money. So.
Right.
I like New England -2.5.
Me
I'm
too.
Guessing that moves – that'll move to like 4 maybe mm-hmm. by game time, because there will be so much money coming in on New England. Now, let's get to the segment that everyone loves, home dog of the week. I don't know if you all love it, because no one's actually tagged
we
me
love it, though.
On Twitter. Yeah,
we love it.
No one's tagged me on Twitter to say thanks for making me money, but let's see. So the two games that I find are even plausible this week, because the board is so terrible for home dogs, is – the Vikings hosting the Seattle Seahawks, who almost got come from behind – or did get come from behind beat by Tennessee last week, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. So at home with the 12s all filling that place. So I don't know what that is, but they're going into Minnesota this week. Mm-hmm. The Vikings, who have lost 2 insanely close games, they have 2 losses by 4 total points.
Right.
Both road games, get their first home game of the year. They are getting 1.5 points at a -120. To win, it is even money.
Right.
So +100. You don't lay any juice. So you bet your 100, you get your 100.
Why exactly do you think that's the case? Because the Vikings, I mean, I know what you're saying. They've played these teams close. But, I mean, the Seahawks, for as long as I know, and I mean, I know obviously Minnesota's a tough place to play, but – Seahawks are Seahawks with Russell Wilson, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
I like Seattle. I like watching Russ run that offense. I just feel like – so there's an old phrase in the gambling world called a throw-in-the-sink game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you got, throw in the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, week 3 of a 17-week season, but this has that feeling to it. You can't lose 2 games that close. Because then
true.
If you come home and you're home opener and you lose again, you know, I like Mike Zimmer as a dude. I think he's a really good coach. But then you're going to start worrying about losing that locker room. Our guy's going to show up and try as hard. You're also in a division where you've got Aaron Rodgers, who just looked like actual Aaron Rodgers this past week. I think that's a must win for them, as much as I hate to say it in week 3.
I can see that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I can see where you're going with
that
prediction.
Well, since you don't think that's going to happen, let's move on to the other plausible home dog of the week. Tom Brady, my birthplace, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, head out to Los Angeles to SoFi Stadium, that gorgeous facility out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they are playing the Los Angeles Rams. They are, the Rams yep. are getting 1.5, mm-hmm. and they are a plus 102, bet 100, win 102, if they win on the money line, which is, of course, the point of home dog of the week. Interesting tidbit for our listeners. This will be the first time Tom Brady has played a professional football game, unless you think he was getting paid at Michigan. Anyways, has played in the NFL. Let's say has played in a National Football League game in the city of Los Angeles. So he's got a clean slate.
Uh-huh.
Does he get his first W? What do you think?
I go back and forth with this one all day. I agree with you in thinking the Rams, the home dog here, wins this game. But I just, because of my personal history with Tom Brady, struggle every time I think against him. Because I just feel like he plays even better when he goes into environments and in games that people think he's not going to win. And, like, everybody is going to take the Rams in this game, even though the Bucs are 2-0 and they're reigning Super Bowl champs. I think he gets so much pride out of going into places where his back is turning, everybody's turning their back against him, and he wins. And I just don't know if the Rams are for real because, yes, Matthew Stafford had that big explosive first game, and then they almost lost to the Colts. So I don't know. I go back and forth. I change this one, but I'm going to go, I think the Bucs win. So I don't agree with you at all today.
Hey, that's fine. And you know what? That's the whole point of this. We talk it out, right?
Yeah.
So drum roll. My pick for the home dog of the week that I'm going to actually bet my real money on is going to be the Vikings at even money to beat the Sea Chickens.
I would.
The Fighting Warren Moons, if you will.
I would do that one over Rams versus Bucks because that one's just such a toss-up. But I would not be surprised, and I will gladly give you your props next week if the Fighting Kirk Cousins beat Seattle at home.
Here we go. And then one last thing before we finish the segment. For next week, Thursday Night Football, the game, the matchup that Charlie Goldsmith is going to blow people's minds with his preview content and the feature he's working on. Cincinnati Bengals versus Jacksonville Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, part deux. So, Bengals right now.
I see what you did there.
Bengals right now. If all of you out there are interested, I know I'm doing this tomorrow when I go out to the sports book. Bengals right now are only laying 6.5. Now, you have to be willing to bet that A, the Bengals will suffer no catastrophic injuries this week. B, they will not look as bad as they did in Chicago. C, somehow, some way, Trevor Lawrence doesn't all of a sudden look like he's playing the terrible ACC again, which, by the way,
he has overrated. Not looked good.
No, because he's playing the NFL.
Yeah.
Not the third worst division in all of major college football. And yes, the AAC, in my opinion, is better than the ACC if you cut off the top team from each.
Okay.
My opinion. Anywho's. Had to get that out.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, because when he was there, the ACC was god-awful.
Yes.
So, yes, Bengals are only laying 6.5 next week against the Jaguars. Both teams will be coming off a short week. Urban Meyer returns to Ohio. If you want to get it before it becomes a touchdown, you might want to hurry up and do that soon. Just a little tip for our listeners.
Heard it here first. Jason, thanks so much for joining us.
One reminder, as we got to do every week. Mm-hmm. All lines are provided by Tipico Sportsbook. Yes. Tipico Sportsbook is an official partner of the USA Today Sports Network. Gannett Company, Inc., which owns the USA Today Sports Network, can make money off of and does sometimes profit off of Tipico's partnership. So we have to let everyone know that. Also, if you or anyone you know has a problem with gambling, please call 1-800-GAMBLER. Troubled gambling is no joke, and we want this to be fun for everybody. None of what we say here is meant to be professional gambling advice. It's all for fun, so have fun out there.
That is true. Have fun out there. Jason, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for Charlie and I getting you all set for the upcoming AFC North clash in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field. Charlie, give us your last final prediction here.
Yeah, I'll go Cincinnati Bengals win 24-24. to 20. Again, I think that Pittsburgh's offense leaves so much room on the table for the Bengals to force turnovers and for the Bengals offense to have enough time to pull away.
All right. Well, he's picking the Bengals. It should be a fun one to watch. We'll talk to you guys post-game as we will be back like we have been the last 2 weeks with our post-game analysis on the Bengals Beat podcast.